Good morning. Instead of facing traffic today, what if you could telecommute and get your employer a tax credit? Society of Human Resource Management's Melissa Plavacek considers the possibilities. Meanwhile, Honolulu's mayor would like the city to be among the World Health Organization's global network of age-friendly cities. The UH Center on Aging plan will do that, and it'll be unveiled this weekend. We'll get a preview from Deputy Managing Director Georgia Deemer. On Tuesday, February 3rd, it's The Conversation.
I'm Chris Vanderkirk. The ancient world of no drama is preserved more or less unchanged through the centuries. Today we'll hear from scholar Kenneth Lawrence on the samurai warrior on the no stage. And would you invest 10 weeks for personal development? Maui's Rhonda Felix says there is much to be learned from books. Stay here for The Conversation, but next, the news. Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Bethann.
Good morning. I was listening to that music and thinking, just in case this morning we're a little too much for you.
Soft and soothing.
Well, maybe that'll happen in this show. Maybe not. Anyway, this morning we're going to start off with something that may be very near and dear to your heart if you live in Honolulu. You might be looking at the city and thinking, well, what makes a livable city for people of all ages? No matter how old you are, you probably have a list. And this weekend, you'll have a chance to see how your list matches the city of Honolulu's. A University of Hawaii Center on Aging study is the basis for Honolulu's age-friendly initiative. And before it's unveiled, we'll get a preview of it from the Deputy Managing Director for the City and County of Honolulu, Georgia Deemer, who joined us in our studio this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann.
And I'm sorry for this little bitty cough. Anyway, good to see you. Now, this is not just something in and of Honolulu. This is part of a whole network of cities that are participating with the WHO, the World Health Organization's guidelines for age-friendly cities. Mm-hmm. And that's been going on since 2011, and there are now a whole smattering of them around the world, around the country. What does Honolulu need to do to be among them?
Well, first of all, you have to apply to the World Health Organization in cooperation with AARP to join the initiative for age-friendly cities. But you do have to meet certain criteria. And Mayor Caldwell, in his first State of the City, announced that we would be applying. They have accepted our application. We had to develop a steering committee. We had to come up with a report, an action plan, within 2 years, which is where we are now. We're right at the two-year point. And the next 3 years is actually to implement the action plan. So the whole point of WHO and AARP is that it's not supposed to be a plan that sits on the shelf once it's done. You are to implement it into not only your city, but also to be the leader in implementing it within the private sector as well.
So if I'm a kid or if I'm someone who is north of 65 or 70, the idea is that a city should be welcoming to me.
Yes. Age-friendly doesn't just mean for the elderly. Age-friendly encompasses all ages, actually. And the thought is that we shouldn't be building cities as if everybody was 30 years old and healthy and active. We need to be talking about building a city that, if it is friendly for someone who is 80 years old, it's also going to be friendly to somebody who is 8 years old and everyone in between.
So this is not just about making sure that curbs are wheelchair-friendly.
No. It's really about making our city a more livable city for all ages.
So what does that look like? Because we've talked about, you know, complete streets and walkability and livability and sustainability and the resilience of the inner core and all those things. Mm-hmm. But to make a city truly age-friendly, as AARP and certainly the WHO define it, what are we going to see as this plan begins to roll out?
Well, what you've been describing is what we would consider the outdoor spaces, the physical infrastructure of a city. But we're also talking about other aspects of living, such as communication, technology, housing, health, community involvement, employment, actually, even for the elderly. So we are really talking about all facets of life, but you need to look at it more through a different lens, to become more age-friendly.
I mean, this is sort of like when you first have a baby and you get down on your hands and knees and start crawling around your house and seeing everything from a baby's level.
Yes.
You realize how much stuff is in your house that you've got to move. You're saying taking the same approach with the city and looking at it, but through multiple lenses of people of different ages.
That's right. You know, because there are actually six domains that we've been looking at, which are based on the domains from the World Health Organization. But when you actually look down into these individual domains, you see so many other things that will affect, you know, people of my generation who may be in denial, you know, that retirement is coming up. Are we prepared, not just as a society, but for our own lives? And it's not just about money. It's about social involvement. I mean, what's going to happen when you don't have a job to go through to it in the morning? You know, are you going to become isolated? What's the supportive community going to be around you?
And hopefully not just your TV as your best friend.
Exactly. Or how can you get access to information? How many seniors are so tech savvy that they're going to be able to maneuver the internet, get the services they need? How are we going to reach those people who aren't or who have no interest in it?
So how tangibly can you say that a few of those things will be spinning out from this plan? What will we see?
Actually, all of those things will be spinning out from the plan. The six domains that we'll be talking about on Saturday with the summit, we'll be going into some detail about what the report has found. But on Saturday, which I hope many people will come out to attend, we're going to be going out into the audience and talking to people about how they feel, what they feel their needs are going to be. We've been working for the past year with the community, with probably about 100 people in our community that have provided their expertise and their input into these domains. But we know that that's not all there is out there. There are lots of things that we haven't even thought about, probably. That's where we're inviting the community to come in and talk to us. And that's also a criteria from WHO and AARP. They require that we have great community participation from all ages as well. We're inviting kids to come to this summit. We're inviting people of all ages, and there are schools that actually have classes that study, you know, becoming age friendly. Planning for our city, planning for their own generation as they grow. So it's amazing.
So what is the most surprising thing that you've heard so far that has come out from any of the groups that you've been meeting with?
Well, I think the most surprising thing is how many people actually are out there, more so than we realized, that want to continue to be active, engaged citizens, but they don't really necessarily have the networks to do all of that, and so that's where I think that the city or other large organizations can make a difference.
So this is not just about aging in place, but this is aging in many different places any way you want to, as you are able to, if a city welcomes you.
Yes, and I think the technology is going to be a big part of that. 20 years ago, we had no internet. And look how our lives have changed in terms of how we get information, how we learn, how we connect with each other. I imagine that 20 years from now, we're also going to be living in a whole different kind of city, kind of communication. Technology is going to affect how we live, not just, you know, information-wise, but infrastructure-wise as well.
Well, it sounds like hopefully it may be a good bit of fun, too, in the next 20 years. One thing's for sure, if all things are well, we'll be able to see some of that and see how this plan begins to roll out as it's implemented.
May I give a plug for what's happening?
I sure will, and we'll put it onto our Facebook page, too, so everybody can go to that as well if they'd like to participate.
Okay.
Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Georgette Deemer is the Deputy Managing Director for the City and County of Honolulu, and more about this Saturday's meeting so you can see what the Age-Friendly Cities Plan looks like will be on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation. This is The Conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. It's 8:16 exactly. Later in the show, the cult of the samurai kept alive in ancient drama. But first, here's your backyard quiz.
For this morning's quiz, we took a look at a fixture in Hawaii, the Honolulu International Airport. Dedicated in March of 1927, it's one of the busier hubs in the country, serving tens of millions of passengers each year. But way back when, plans for the construction of the island's first airport were drawn up by the territorial government in 1925. A total of $45,000 was appropriated, with the stipulation that $20,000 of private funds first be raised. With that money, 119 acres of private land was originally purchased as the grounds for Hawaii's first full-featured civilian airport. Passengers could fly from Honolulu to Maui or Kauai for $20, or to faraway Hilo for $32. In today's dollars, those fares translate to about $272 and $436. The airport has only been known as Honolulu International Airport since 1951, and for the 25 years from its creation in 1927 until 1951, it went by a different name. So here's our question for this morning. Can you tell us the airport's original name? Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. We'll share the answer with you later in the show and see who got it right.
If you listen regularly, you know that on Tuesdays, Bill Sage goes in search of conversation at a coffee spot. And today he's at Glazer's near Puck's Alley to find out what's brewing. Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Today, a gentleman who's very glad he's not on the East Coast, where he was recently, and a UC Davis grad who's now getting his master's in planning at the university. Ty, welcome and good morning to you.
Good morning.
So right now, we were talking before we went on the air about you're identifying the problem of planning and costs versus available housing and land space, and I suppose your main thrust is what to do about this problem.
Yeah, so definitely it's a complicated problem, but you know, getting more available units. I mean, there's a space issue, but I think if we can get more incentives for all the people who own existing homes to maybe rent out their units for less, or to get an incentive.
Incentives perhaps being if we have more space available, it might take a little bit of the pressure off, and that might be just by building more units to begin with.
Yeah, definitely. To build it on some of these vacant lots, and the cost of construction is it, but I mean the cost of construction is high on the mainland, so it can definitely get done.
So what we can do is plant a bug in the brain of people out there to think about the land available and how we can best utilize it. I wish you all the best of luck in your future in planning. And our plans are to come back in about a half hour right here at Glazer's and have more of the coffee conversation known as What's Brewing. But for now, back to you in the studio.
Hi, good morning. I'm Frankie Enos from the Actors Group. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR2. Find out more about the show at hawaiipublicradio.org/theconversation.
Japanese no drama remains obedient to strict tradition and is likely the oldest form of theater still being performed today. Its roots go back to the 14th century. In highly stylized performance art that integrates dance and music with elaborate costumes and props to tell stories based on ancient tales. Kenneth Lawrence has given Japanese no theater a lifetime of study. He's in Hawaii for a series of lectures and performances about the samurai warrior on the no stage, and he joins us by phone. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
It's been a fascinating subject of study for you.
It really has, and it kind of came about by accident, but I'm glad it did.
What was the accident?
Well, I married into a family of licensed no performers. The woman I fell in love with happened to have parents who were no performers, and so I guess originally it was pressure from my future in-laws to see the no plays. And I'm glad that pressure happened because it's absolutely beautiful, fascinating form.
When you say licensed no performers, that kind of speaks to the whole effort to keep that tradition alive in its pure form, yeah?
Yeah, and it goes way back. One of the pieces we're performing tonight, tomorrow night, is Kiyotsune. It was written by Zayami, and he's like the Shakespeare of no theater. And we don't know exactly when it was written, but we know it was before 1425. And no more or less has been performed more or less the same for about 650, 700 years. So,
deliberately resisting the any attempts to transform it, modernize, as other forms of theater have done, yeah?
Yeah, it influences other forms, anything from kabuki to German theater, Western theater. New plays are written. I saw Dracula. It's a one-off. People see it, and afterwards they don't much care, which I understand because there are many, many masterpieces in the repertoire.
All of which, well, it's a world of warriors, world of ghosts.
Well, there are ghosts and demons. The most interesting for me are about tortured spirits of samurai, not only because it's a fascinating, very, very different culture, but also because I can relate, which is very strange to me.
Yeah.
There are plays about samurai who are disappointed because there's basically a glass ceiling. I can relate to that. The play that we're performing tomorrow night, the Hamlet question is asked, basically, is life worth living?
Uh-huh.
And a man goes back, the spirit of a samurai goes back, perhaps in a dream, to talk to his widow. And, of course, if you have one more chance to talk to someone you love who has passed away, what would you do? You would fight. They have an argument, which is, and it's a very touching argument. And unfortunately, I can relate to that one, too.
I've seen that particular trope of getting one more chance to talk to a departed loved one in other Japanese works. I'm thinking of Mitsuguchi's film Ugetsu revolves around that. But as you say, the influence spreads throughout the culture, yeah?
Yeah, the Japanese culture and many of their art forms have influence that goes is very profound and very widespread. And the visiting artists, the Takedas, Munenori, and Fumiyuki, are very excited that even in about an hour and a half, we're going to present to about 700 children in Maui. And that interest is very, very exciting for them. So the influence continues.
Well, they're going to be drawn in for sure by the costumes, the music, just the unique atmosphere that's presented, yeah?
Yeah, and we're kind of going to give away the secret. No is a theater of stillness, but it also has high energy. So we're going to show how the actors manage to do that. And the techniques of the masks are very unique and different. And so I think we did bring three masks, so they'll be excited by that, I'm sure.
As you say, it's a theater of stillness. It's a very, very intense stillness, yeah?
Yes. If you see people standing on stage and not moving for a long period of time or moving very little, it's boring, except in No. That's one of the first things I thought when I saw it. Why is this so fascinating? It's like watching, this is going to be very kung fu, like from the TV show, but it's been described as like dew gathering on the petal of a flower waiting to drop. So there's something is about to happen. Or a samurai warrior who has to be ready at any moment in case he's attacked. He's not just standing there. And it has a lot to do with the training and techniques of the actors. It's absolutely fascinating.
It's kind of a coiled spring effect, sounds like.
Yes. That's a good analogy, too. Or a spider ready to pounce? I'm not sure.
Well, it's undoubtedly going to be fascinating for your audiences. And thanks very much for talking with us.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet. Kenneth Lawrence will speak about the Samurai Warrior on the No stage tomorrow evening on Maui at the McCoy Studio Theater. That's at 7:30. He'll also be at UH Manoa this Saturday, and you can get details on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Up on the autism spectrum.
We have this whole cohort of people with a lot to offer the world. And how are we going to respond to that challenge?
A challenge for kids and parents who often have to go in alone, seeking community, but finding intolerance. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
This morning at 9, right after The Conversation.
S is for sustainability. Listeners who become sustaining members know that providing the station ongoing monthly gifts allows HPR to plan and invest in innovative new ideas. We gratefully acknowledge new sustaining members Stephen Behe and Regina Parsons of Captain Cook, Richard and Lissy Chadwick of Honolulu, and Carrie Chesser of Kailua. You can join them in sustaining HPR by calling us at 955-8821 during business hours or follow the support link on hpr2.org. If you look at the roster of Hawaii's senators, you'll see that Brickwood Galateria represents District 12. But some critics say he doesn't actually live in the district home he claims on his taxes. Yesterday, Senator Galateria admitted that the rental property in Palolo isn't his primary address. His reality check may be a $1.8 million bill for back taxes, and with the rest of it, Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair checks in now. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Beth Ann.
Okay, well, this is sort of a bit like what we saw with Calvin Say, a few shades of that, but then not really, because Galateri still is in part of his district in terms of living in it, but it's just the matter of this house, isn't it?
Well, there's a couple of things. And Calvin Say, the former House Speaker, you'll remember people that live in his district, which, by the way, is Palolo, includes Palolo, say he doesn't actually live there. He lives in Punchbowl. So far, the courts have not weighed in on that. So that's really the kuleana of Joe Suki over at the House. And a case is pending before the House Speaker there. But in terms of Galateri, the trick here is his district is District 12, which is really Ala Moana, Waikiki, and Kaka'ako. But this home that he calls his primary residence is in Palolo, and he's claimed this homeowner's tax exemption to the tune of about $80,000 every year since 2006.
Doesn't the 12th Senate District, though, include parts of Kaka'ako?
Oh, if I misspoke, I apologize. Palolo, he also has a property in Kaka'ako, which he says he lives in with his wife and his mother. But a critic of Galateri said, look, that's a single bedroom with only one bath. How can you possibly live in that small of a space? Well, the senator counters, hey, this is a privacy issue. I'm taking care of my mother. I'm the primary caregiver. But Galateri for sure has admitted that he claimed as his primary residence. In other words, the place where he says he lives is actually in a district that he does not represent.
So now what happens at this point?
Well, right now, the city is going to calculate how much he owes in back taxes. The home costs $1.8 million. I don't know that the penalty will be that high. But the city is also going to rule as early as this week whether he properly voted in the last election. In other words, should you have voted in that Palolo residence or should you have voted in the Kaka'ako residence? And his critics, who, by the way, supported his opponent in the last election, say they really don't think he lives in the district he claims to represent.
Well, that could be problematic for a lot of reasons, but in terms of having back taxes for Senator Galateri on a $1.8 million home, that's also something that's got to be decided. What happens with that?
Well, there's going to be a complaint filed with the state Senate. And, of course, a court ruled in Calvin Say's case that it's really their kuleana to decide what your residency is. So Donna Kim will have to review that complaint and decide whether there's something to it, whether Brickwood Galateri is misrepresenting where he lives. They have the authority, according to a district court, on residency issues involving lawmakers.
Any sense of whether this is going to turn out similarly to what we saw with Calvin Say? A lot of conversation, but then kind of falling flat?
You know, it's a good question. They are not exactly parallel. There are a lot of similarities. But because of the homeowner's tax exemption, that puts this in a different situation because he's basically said, look, I live here, so give me that tax exemption. But in fact, you're representing another area. So that's a twist that's different than the Calvin Say case.
All right. We'll wait and see what happens, which could be that nothing will happen. But we'll wait and see if that happens, too.
We'll let you know.
Thanks, Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Chad okay. Blair reports on politics for CivilBeat.com.
Support for today's programming comes from Maui Arts and Cultural Center, presenting The Q, a comedic dance production set in an airport. 7:30 this Friday in Castle Theater, mauiarts.org.
Aloha, I'm Von Baron from the Honolulu Jazz Quartet. You're tuned to HPR2, Hawaii Public Radio. Learn more about what you hear on the show at facebook.com/HIConversation.
For some people, it's a daily fantasy, working for a company but working from home. No traffic, no office hassles, no parking fees. The benefits of telecommuting are many, but if a bill up for consideration today makes its way through the ledge, another bonus might be a tax credit for an employer who allows employees to telecommute. Melissa Pavlicek has taken a look at the up and downsides of SB 696 and some of the other HR-related bills this session. She's the executive director of the Society of Human Resource Management, Hawaii chapter, and she's on the phone with us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Thanks for talking to me this morning.
Well, thanks for weighing in on this because, you know, we hear things like, you know, this looks really neat, a wonderful idea. You can, you know, do your work in your jammies if you want and get paid for it. And everybody kind of has those ideas, what if? And there are some people who are lucky enough to do that. But whether that all translates into an exemption, or not an exemption, but a tax credit for an employer is a totally different issue. And that comes with it a whole lot of other information and infrastructure changes that would have to be brought into play too, wouldn't it?
Well, I think there's so many good reasons for employers to have flexible work arrangements, and the Society for Human Resource Management Hawaii chapter has 1,000 HR professionals here in Hawaii who work on balancing employer and employee needs every day. And we have really good data from our national organization to show that having flexible work arrangements increases employee engagement and retention. And it's also been tied to the health of employees and profitability for companies. So I'm really excited to talk about this today.
Well, that all sounds great in flexibility. You know, who's going to argue with that? But when it comes down to should an employer be given a tax credit for it, that puts a whole other burden on the Department of Taxation, which is one of the reasons they don't like it. I mean, citing that they're going to have to change forms, create whole bunches of people to be able to handle
Certainly
it.
Certainly looking at
all of
the
that. How do you balance
overall
that?
To employers and to taxpayers is a consideration. But there are so many good arguments for employers to offer telecommuting, and not just telecommuting, but other kinds of flexibility, such as later start times, shared time off, creating a culture of flexibility. According to our research, companies can reduce operating costs by more than $6,500 for every person who telecommutes just once a week. So it may be that once employers really become educated about some of these flexible work options, we no longer need any kind of tax credit. And in fact, our HR organization isn't going to be weighing in on this bill yet, but we do firmly believe in flexible work arrangements.
So perhaps one of the intents of this bill might be to sort of change the conversation or focus more of it on the idea of the benefits of flexibility, not necessarily having to attach a tax credit to it.
Absolutely, and I think that many employers are concerned that productivity will drop. As you said, we have a mental image of working from home, and sometimes that entails a picture of us in our fuzzy slippers or our pajamas, maybe not getting as much done as we would at the desk. But 97% of HR professionals say productivity is the same or even better with flexible work.
So why don't we have more flexibility built into our structure? And we've been talking about flexibility and flex time for, 20 years.
I think one of the reasons is we don't always know all the tools available to us. So some people think it means just working from home, and certainly having a telecommute option, even if it's just one day a week, might help. But there are jobs, such as being a bank teller, where telecommuting might not be the most viable option, but sharing time off or having alternative start times could be another way an employer could handle flexibility in those type of job situations.
Yeah, that goes back to the idea of flex time. But when we saw, more people entering, more women especially entering the workforce, we were talking a lot about flex time and the way of accountability, to be accountable, but also being able to fit in parenting and now taking care of elders, all of that. Has that pressure sort of reached a point now where this is much more in our consciousness than it was even 10
or 20
years ago?
You're raising a really good issue, and we found that 45% of men report work-life conflict as opposed to only 39% of women. So whereas we thought of it as a women's issue, we now see it as a family and an employee issue. And in fact, one in two employees expect to provide elder care in the next 5 years. Nearly one in five currently do. So you're absolutely right. This is something that is on the mind of men and women in the workforce and their employers.
So just to sort of bring this back to looking at how we look at some of these bills that are coming through the ledge now that are HR geared. Anything in particular that stands out for you besides the idea of that we've got to look at flex time and flexibility much more closely because we have a population that needs it?
Well, many employers now offer paid time off as opposed to a traditional sick leave, and there are some bills at the legislature mandating either employer paid sick leave or employee insurance to pay for wages when an employee is out sick. And some of those do not seem to be promoting flexibility. So we the Society for Human Resource Management Hawaii chapter, we support giving employers and employees the maximum amount of flexibility. These WorkFlex programs that we've been talking about today are part of a national program called When Work Works, and we nominated a number of Hawaii employers to participate in the program. Four of them received national recognition, and we're really proud of the work that Hawaii employers are doing in this area.
All right, and perhaps after some of these bills begin moving through, others will consider it to do it as well. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Melissa Pavlicek is the Executive Director of the Society for Human Resource Management Hawaii Chapter, and SB 696 will be heard later today, actually at 9 o'clock, and that's the one that revolves around the idea of giving income tax credits to employers who allow for employees to telecommute. Moving on now, as we've been talking here, more conversation has been happening at Glazer's in Mo'ili'ili, where Bill Sage is this morning. Bill, what's brewing by you?
Well, good morning, Beth Ann. This morning, right now, for a second guest, we have Terry, who has come from France, and he is now living and working in Hawaii. And Terry, it's wonderful to have you this morning. One thing I wanted to ask about is the horrible massacre that happened with Charlie Hebdo in France. You must have had a lot of feelings about that and friends who are affected as well.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me already. But yeah, that was something like very special for us. I was in Hawaii and I was talking with my parents over Skype. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden my dad said, oh my God, something happened just in Paris.
So literally as it was happening.
Yeah, it was happening. It was like, we have like 11 hours difference. Yeah. It was like the evening, it was like the morning here. Or the opposite, but yeah, that was something very special. All of a sudden, you know, like France was attacked, you know, like the same way that you were attacked, you know, like in 2001, you know, so it's something like for us that was like
your own 9/11 in effect.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was, you know, and what it is exactly right now. But it was not only like Charlie Hebdo, like the next day something else happened, and you know, like it was during 3 days, you know, like this like chasing, you know, all over France, and it was like like all of a sudden, you know, like living here in Hawaii, I felt like very lucky, you know, to be far away. And I felt very sad too, not being there, because like the walk that we had on the Sunday after, when we have like 4 million people in France, like walking, I was like a little bit sad not to be there, you know, to be supporting. But
part of the solidarity. Just time goes so fast in this program. I want to ask you quickly, do you see any solution for the way France is handling the problem? Would you suggest anything?
I think like right now, like they do like a pretty good job, you know, like even like this morning I was reading in the news, like they arrest like 8 more jihadists. Yeah, so that's like it's they're really taking, you know, like
Madame Boumediene is now the most wanted list. And do they know she's still in France?
No, she's not in France. Okay. They say she's in Syria right now.
Okay. Well, it's one of those things that's real wake up, and as you're probably saying, lucky you live Hawaii this time.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like we are like very lucky to be here, and it's like it's such like a little like real island, like so far from all over the world. We are connected to everyone, but we are lucky to be here.
Perhaps the aloha spirit can help the problem go away somewhat. Terry, thank you. Merci beaucoup for being on the air.
Thank you so much. Alrighty. Merci.
Hello. And next week we will be over at Tango's, so we'll be learning some new dance steps about the art of the conversation when we have a cup brewing. Meanwhile, merci beaucoup, Uncle. Back to you in the studio.
And now we're going to go back to our backyard quiz. This morning we looked at the history of the Honolulu International Airport. Since 1951, that has been its name, but in 1927, when it opened, it had a different name, and today we asked if you knew it. Here's the story. The airport was named after a Navy aviator who commanded the first attempt at a trans-Pacific nonstop flight from the mainland to Hawaii. In August 1925, that's 2 years before Charles Lindbergh's famous transatlantic crossing, this commander took off from San Pablo Bay in San Francisco in a Navy seaplane with his crew. More than 25 hours in the air at around 1,900 miles, the plane was forced to land for lack of fuel. Now, although the Navy had stationed fuel ships across the Pacific in preparation, this commander was given incorrect bearings, leading to the plane to be stranded in the water. It was still over 300 miles from its destination on Oahu, and communications were cut off, and the search failed to find the plane. This commander and his crew managed to fashion a makeshift sail from parts of the wings and sail their aircraft to within view of Kauai, where they were spotted by a submarine that towed them into Ahukini Harbor. John Rogers Airport was dedicated to this commander 2 years later.
And Beth Ann, thanks to Pat Lucas from Molokai, called in and knew that answer. Her husband was in the Navy, and she says he used the field all the time. That's today's quiz. If you have one at 8:48, you can send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org. Hawaii abounds with self-help gurus of different stripes, and although it's impossible to say exactly how effective they are, it's probably safe to say they're most helpful to those who are most committed. That commitment is essential to those taking part in a 10-week book study being offered by Rhonda Felix of the Soul Space Maui Renewal Center. She believes that if you can change your thinking, you can change your life as long as you stick with it. And as she says, this is not a drop-in class. Rhonda Felix is on the line with us now. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning.
I like that you emphasized commitment on the part of people who take part, because it's not something where you can take a passive role, is it?
No, and actually, isn't that the key to life in general, being committed to what we believe to be true, even though sometimes we can't see it. We just have to keep acting as if. It takes commitment.
And that seems so abundantly clear. Why do we have so much trouble with it?
Because we have so many beliefs that we've been brought up with, either in our family of origin, in our schools, in our churches. I mean, it's always best to preface that whatever information we received, it was always well-intentioned. But at some point, oftentimes, it would... I would say it would demean our ability to trust in ourselves and trust in our highest. We would, you know, that low self-esteem, that I'm not enough. That seems to be the basis of most of our ills, is I'm not enough.
Well, I think a lot of the lessons that many of us remember from childhood are of the don't do this, don't do that variety. And certainly when I see the kind of rhetoric you're using here, it's more about who you are, what kind of power you have inside. Pretty different, isn't it?
Well, it is different, but what's interesting is we can't jump from A to C. We can't go, well, I'm just going to change my thoughts and then it'll all change. The truth is, if the thought and the feeling in the gut are not in alignment, the feeling in the gut is going to over picture the thought. So if I'm working on changing my thoughts about who I am, but I have a deep-seated feeling that I'm not enough, that deep-seated feeling is what's going to trump. It's what's going to keep out-picturing. So the goal of this class and this work is to look at those beliefs. We can't skip it. So many times and so many formats, we just want to skip over it. And the person, I'm sure you're familiar with Ram Dass and his famous book, Be Here Now, he has a drawing on one of the pages, and it's a path, little stone pathway. And he talks about if you skip any of those steps, at some point you have to come back. And that's what I found. I wanted to skip it all, but it all kept replaying. So now I have found that I have to go back and, to the best of my ability, see where it stemmed from so that I can let it go.
Well, we live in a skip past the stones society,
yeah,
don't we? I mean,
yes,
hey, just give me the executive summary, you know, enough with the details. Let's get to the cut to the chase, right? That doesn't work, does it?
Well, it doesn't, and I think as much as I enjoyed the 60s and 70s, personally, that kind of put us in a place where we could skip. We had a revolution into what was ours and what our minds were capable of doing, and many of us just wanted to skip. We just went, okay, well, now this is where we want to go. Let's just leave the rest of the past behind. And somehow it just kind of catches up with us. It's always at the back end of the deal.
Ironic that you mentioned Ram Dass, because when he was Richard Alpert, he and Timothy Leary, to me, kind of contributed to that, yeah? Take LSD and drop out and everything will be okay.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out. Yes, well, I was right there with them, and I don't mean with them physically, but he was actually one of my first, I would have to say, mentors. And that's right, that's what they... That whole time kind of supported that, to skip ahead. But he woke up and went, I can't skip. I have to come back. I have to take it one step at a time. You know, and it's not always easy, but it's very rewarding. And truly, it's all about forgiveness. That's what it all comes to. You know, you look at it, and you don't look at it to belabor a situation or a person. You look at it to see where it fed into you, and then you forgive it, because in forgiving, we let it go.
Do a lot of people, Rhonda, judge themselves more harshly than perhaps anyone else judges them?
Always, and we're our own worst critic, and you can only treat yourself the way you treat others. If you see that you're harsh on other people, you can only do that to yourself. Our outside is always a reflection of our inside. Which is hard to sometimes fathom. It's, you know, we live in such a society of blame. Because you're doing this, it makes me feel this way. It's hard to accept it's my own interior setup that's making me feel this way.
So you've got a lot of your work cut out for you in this this 10-week book study, huh?
Well, I love it. And actually, people do it for themselves. It's that willingness to... kind of like unwrapping a package. You start, and then you keep going, and then you muddle through it. It gets kind of sticky, and then you see the gift.
Well, we'll wish you all kinds of luck with that, Rhonda. Thanks very much for taking the time with us this morning.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and I loved hearing about the airport.
Oh, good. Rhonda Felix of the Soul Space Maui Renewal Center in Wailuku is offering a 10-week book study course called Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life, and you can learn more about it on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Multi-Hoku Award-winning Hawaiian musician Kenneth Makua Kane performs a rare solo concert in HPR's intimate Atherton Studio February 7th. Join him as he brings back that old Hawaiian style, Saturday the 7th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets for Kenneth Makua Kane at hprtickets.org or by calling 955-8821 during business hours.
Well, the population, Beth Ann, is aging, and the city is getting more crowded. It's hard to reconcile those things.
And who's it getting crowded with is also part of the implicit questioning that they've been looking at with this city. We started the hour earlier today talking about the age-friendly city initiative that Honolulu is engaged with. It's dealing with some of the guidelines from the WHO, the World Health Organization, AARP, and what that means for everybody, not people who are just, you know, north of 70, but what about little kids? What about, you know, singles? What about people who are of, you know, who have families? How do our cities respond to all that?
Well, we're certainly seeing the pressures of urban life more and more in Honolulu, aren't we?
As everybody seems to be moving back in some places, but maybe not. Suburbs aren't dead yet.
Not yet, no.
Anyway, we will talk to you more tomorrow when Neil Milner will be back. He has some new research on political polarization that may reshape the long view.
And a Mardi Gras preview performed live in our studio. If you have something to say about anything you hear on our station, email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org.
Or you can post your comments on Facebook. Our page is Hawaii Conversation. Or tweet us. We're at HI Conversation or at BKOZHPR.
If you want past shows, you can find them on the HPR2 archive, along with links to more information about guests and topics, lots of other good things. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll meet you in the morning for more of The Conversation. See you then.